The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We're going to be resuming with Volume 57, Number 2 issue, which is the Spring 2018 issue of the Tar Heel Junior Historian, and it is Blackbeard, Secret from Queen's Anne's Revenge. First article will be Who Was Blackbeard? By Stephen B. Atkinson, who was a conservator at the Queen Anne's Revenge Lab. Everyone seems to know Edward Teach, otherwise known as Blackbeard the Pirate. To many, he has become the symbol of pirate life. His image is seen all over the Outer Banks of North Carolina, from gift shops and museums to advertisements and restaurant signs, but we actually know very few details about the man himself. The story of Blackbeard before he became a pirate is still a matter of debate, but it is largely thought that he hailed from either Jamaica, Bristol in the United Kingdom, or perhaps even the town of Bath right here in North Carolina. His name first surfaces associated with piracy in 1717. He was said to have been operating in the Bahamas with Benjamin Hornigold, even working with the pirate Stede Bonnet for a time, before setting out on his own. After a handful of successful prizes, Blackbeard took control of the French slave ship La Concorde off the coast of Martinique. He made it his flagship and renamed it Queen Anne's Revenge. Harrowing tales of his exploits range from the brash, bold, and daring to even somewhat romantic. He was bold enough to hold the entire city of Charleston, South Carolina, for ransom, and often shot members of his own crew to keep them in line. Others prefer to read stories of a gentler pirate who found love in Bath and even had plans of settling down. But one thing we know for certain is that the account of his death solidified his place in the history books. Blackbeard's demise has been recounted in many ways, some more fantastical than others. The truth of the tale is that Governor Alexander Spotswood of Virginia feared the formation of a pirate stronghold on Ocracoke, and he had received already many complaints about pirate attacks along the coasts of Virginia and North Carolina. So he funded an expedition of men under the command of Lieutenant Robert Maynard to depose the fearsome pirate once and for all. Early on the morning of November 22, 1718, Maynard's men surprised Blackbeard and his crew, who were waking up from a night of heavy drinking aboard their sloop, hidden in the inner isle side of Ocracoke Island. After many exchanges of gunfire, Maynard successfully disabled Blackbeard's sloop and approached it with most of his men hidden in a hold, the inside of the ship below deck. When Blackbeard boarded the vessel, heavy hand-to-hand combat ensued. It is said that when Blackbeard finally fell, he had 5 musket balls in him and 20 sword wounds all over his body. The final blow against Blackbeard cleaved his head from his body with a single stroke. Maynard kept the bearded head as proof of the pirate's demise and hung it from the bowsprit, the large spar projecting from the stem of his ship, thus bringing an end to one of the world's most infamous pirates. Here are some captions from photographs and drawings accompanying this article. One of the first known images of North Carolina's favorite pirate, Blackbeard. This image is from A General History of the Pirates by Captain Charles Johnson, written in 1724, and now in the public domain. The many moods of Blackbeard. It was said that Blackbeard tied pieces of hemp in his hair and beard and set them on fire to strike fear into the hearts of his opponents. Lieutenant Robert Maynard of the British Royal Navy hung Blackbeard's severed head from the bowsprit of his ship. The image is from The Life, Atrocities, and Bloody Death of Blackbeard in The Pirate's Own Book, 1837, by Charles Elmes. And Blackbeard Cornered, an image from Blackbeard the Pirate, 1825, by John Byfield, Hathi Trust Digital Library, public domain. Next article, A History of Queen Anne's Revenge by Kimberly Urban. Kimberly is a graduate of East Carolina University with a master's degree in anthropology. She's excited to share what she has learned while working at the Queen Anne's Revenge Lab as a graduate assistant. And before starting the article, there's a little sidebar. The most common coin during pirate times was the Spanish milled dollar, also known as a piece of eight. Early coins were valued by their weight and metal content, not at face value as they are today. This coin was often divided into eight pieces called reals or bits, so that you could pay for something and keep the change. 2 bits equaled 1/4 or 1/4 of the coin. Where do you buy a pirate ship? You don't. Blackbeard stole his famous ship from the French. Before Queen Anne's Revenge became Blackbeard's flagship, it was the French ship La Concorde, a privateer ship launched during the Queen Anne's War, 1702 to 1713. Then sometime before spring 1713, the ship was turned into a slave ship. Under command of Captain Leroux, La Concorde was sent out as a privateer, an armed private ship licensed to attack enemy ships and keep their bounty. La Concorde captured 2 slave ships before sailing to the French Caribbean island of Martinique in February 1711. In Martinique, Captain Leroux sold the enslaved people from 1 ship and then remained in the Caribbean with La Concorde until returning to France in November 1711. La Concorde then completed 2 slave trading expeditions in 1713 and 1715. The 2 voyages brought a total of 749 enslaved Africans to the French Caribbean. In 1717, La Concorde left France for what would be its 3rd and final slaving voyage. For this expedition, the ship was commanded by Captain Pierre Dosset and crewed by 75 men. La Concorde's first stop was Whydah, a port city in Benin, Africa. The French crew left port with 516 Africans and set sail for Martinique. In November 1717, less than 100 miles off the coast of Martinique, the ship encountered a fleet of pirates captained by Blackbeard. Blackbeard and his crew, about 250 men, captured La Concorde, converted it into their flagship, and renamed it Queen Anne's Revenge. The pirates took a stash of gold dust the French crew had been hiding and may have kept several enslaved people. 4 French crew members voluntarily joined the pirate crew, and an additional 10 were forced into service. The pirates left the remaining French crew and 455 enslaved people on the island of Bequia, now part of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Blackbeard gave the French the smaller of his 2 sailing vessels called a sloop. The French transported the remaining slaves to Martinique in 2 trips using the sloop they renamed Mauvaise Rencontre, or Bad Encounter. Blackbeard increased Queen Anne's Revenge armament, or weapons, to a reported 40 cannon and spent the next 6 months in the Caribbean. By September, the ship's crew sailed toward the eastern end of Puerto Rico. In March 1718, Blackbeard and his crew captured several ships near Honduras. One was Adventure, captained by David Harriet. Blackbeard added Adventure to his fleet and forced Harriet to become a pirate with his crew. Captures from the Cayman Islands, Cuba, and the Bahamas added to the fleet before they sailed to Charleston, South Carolina in May 1718. In Charleston, the pirates blocked the port and took several ships. As ransom, Blackbeard and his crew were given liquor and food, a chest of medicine worth 300 or 400 pounds, 1,500 pounds sterling, or British money, and many gold pieces of eight. Blackbeard and his fleet fled Charleston and sailed up the coast of the Carolinas to Topsail Inlet, which is now present-day Beaufort. All of Blackbeard's ships safely entered the inlet except for Queen Anne's Revenge, which ran aground on a sandbar a mile from land. The ship Adventure was sent to assist Queen Anne's Revenge, but that ship also ran aground a short distance from Queen Anne's Revenge. Captain Harriet's deposition from the wrecking states that the grounding was done intentionally as an act to break up the band of pirates Blackbeard accumulated and to secure what money or goods he had taken for himself. Additionally, there is no mention of lost lives or circumstances that led to the wrecking of Queen Anne's Revenge. Both vessels were abandoned by the pirates after they ran aground. Here's an associated article, Friend, Foe, or Prize. Pirates and privateers were both the hunters and the hunted. Sailors needed to know quickly which ships were friendly, which to avoid, and which might be sources of treasure. Look at the ship's silhouettes here. Can you guess which ships pirates might consider to be prizes, enemies, or both? First is ships of the line. These were the largest warships. They carried 100 or more cannon and scared their enemies. So they were definitely a foe. Sloops were large cargo ships with single masts. They were designed to favor storage space over speed. Prize. Frigates were the second largest warships. They were used for scouting and assisting other warships in distress. Prize. Schooners were popular merchant vessels with two masts designed for speed and agility. Prize. Brigs or brigantines were large, square-rigged merchant ships. They were popular for pirating and protecting other vessels because of their speed and maneuverability. Both foe and prize. Next, Talk Like a Pirate by Kathy East, who's editor of Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine. Ahoy, mateys. Shiver me timbers. Best read this or I'll make ye walk the plank. Arr! It's fun to read about pirates and fun to talk like one. But I wondered, where did all this pirate talk come from? The spring 2016 issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian included an article called Hoytoid on the Outer Banks, about people who still talk the so-called Outer Banks brogue, an old distinct dialect of English. Pirates once roamed the coast of North Carolina. Could they have talked like the people living on Ocracoke today? To find out, I asked Dr. Jeffrey L. Reeser, an associate professor of English at North Carolina State University. He's director of the Avency State's Language and Life Project, and co-author with Dr. Walt Wolfram of the book Talking Tarheeled. So, what we think of today as pirate talk is actually a product of the cinema, Dr. Reeser revealed. A lot of early pirate movies start a British actor named Robert Newton, who had a very strong West Country dialect from Southwest England. Unfortunately, this dialect is very different from the dialects associated with the Outer Banks brogue, which reflects mostly southeastern English norms and some influence from Scots-Irish. So there's no real connection between the brogue and what people think of as pirate talk. What might a real pirate have sounded like? He continues. The answer is there's no one way of speaking. Notorious pirates hailed from many different backgrounds. Blackbeard was from the West Country. William Kidd was Scottish. Captain Morgan was Welsh. And Stede Bonnet was from a family in southeast England, though he was born in Barbados. And there were, of course, French, Spanish, Chinese, and other nationalities represented in the pirate heyday. So, unfortunately, North Carolina's most famous pirates probably sounded very different from the Outer Banks residents. My original hypothesis did not turn out to be true, but I learned something new. The pirates were from everywhere, and that's pretty cool. Do you talk with a southern drawl, or does your language have roots in other parts of the country or other parts of the world? This just proves that you'll sound like a real, authentic pirate no matter where your accent's from. So go ahead, learn some pirate words and talk like a pirate. Before we go on to the pirate words, here's a caption accompanying poster from a movie called Blackbeard the Pirate. British actor Robert Newton, born in 1905 and dying in 1956, looked like the perfect leading man in the image below, but he became famous for playing pirate types. He's most famous for playing Long John Silver in the movie Treasure Island in 1950, and Blackbeard the Pirate in Blackbeard the Pirate, 1952. When you hear people talk like a pirate, they're copying the way Newton spoke in his films. The poster reads, "The seas have never seen their like. The screen has never matched the thunder of their adventures. Blackbeard the Pirate, color by Technicolor, starring Robert Newton, Linda Darnell, William Bendix, with Keith Andes, Alan Mowbray, an Edmund Granger production directed by Raoul Walsh, screenplay by Alan LeMay, and produced by Edmund Granger." Now on to pirate lingo. Try out these words with your friends on Talk Like a Pirate Day. It's September 19th. Ahoy, mateys, stands for hello, my friends. All hands on deck, a call for all to rush to the deck. Arr, or arg, an interjection to show excitement or pause. Avast ye, stop, check this out, listen up. Aye, that's yes. Black spot, a mark sent as a warning, a death sentence for a pirate who has broken the pirate code. Blow me down, an exclamation of surprise to news so shocking it cannot knock a person down. Davy Jones's locker, a metaphor for the bottom of the sea, the resting place for dead sailors. Feed the fish, to dump a dead man overboard into the ocean. Fire in the hole, a warning that a cannon is about to be fired. Heave ho, words shouted when lifting or pulling on ropes to raise the sails. Lily livered, weak or cowardly. Matey, a friend or shipmate. Old salt, an experienced sailor who has been at sea a long time. Poop deck, the higher part at the back of a ship, usually above the captain's quarters, same as the quarter deck. Sail ho, warning that another ship or sail is on the horizon. Scalawag, a scoundrel or a bad person. Scurvy dog, an insult. Scurvy is a disease caused by a lack of vitamin C, a problem for pirates on long voyages. Shiver me timbers, a shout of surprise. The timbers on a ship might shiver and shake in the sudden gust of a wind at sea. X marks the spot, an X marking the spot on a map where treasure is said to be buried. And yo-ho-ho, ha-ha-ha in pirate talk. Next, Fact or Fiction by Kathy East, a closer look. Most of what we know about real pirates comes from A General History of the Pirates by Captain Charles Johnson, published in 1724. English naval historian David Cordingly has written, "It has been said, and there seems to be no reason to question, that Captain Johnson created the modern conception of pirates. Are these colorful stories of buried treasure and adventures at sea fact or fiction? Some people believe the book was actually written by Daniel Defoe, born in 1660 and died in 1731, a writer and journalist best known for writing the popular novel Robinson Crusoe in 1719. Modern historians believe the stories were definitely grounded in fact, but think the author probably embellished the stories a bit to help sell more books. Want to read the book yourself? You can. It has been scanned page by page and appears online. Check it out through East Carolina University's digital collections at https://digital.lib.ecu.edu/17001. Next, the comic Murphy and Manio, Tar Heel Time Travelers. It happened on a Tar Heel Junior Historian Association club field trip to the North Carolina Museum of History. I love this museum. It's a real treasure. Speaking of treasure, look, there's Blackbeard's ship, Queen Anne's Revenge. Let's take a selfie with it and scroll it back in our time travel app. Anchors away is an old sailor expression. An anchor away is one that has just begun to put weight on the rope while being lifted so the ship can leave. Square meal is an expression we use to mean healthy food. Some say it comes from another old sailor expression meaning any food served to them on a square wooden platter. Hi, he means ahoy. Welcome aboard Queen Anne's Revenge. You're just in time for a square meal. I'm Manio, and he's Murphy. We're new at being pirates. My name is Caesar. A lot of your shipmates are new at being pirates, too. I just got here from serving in the Royal Navy, the greatest navy in the world. Do you know why the Royal Navy is so great? The history of England's Royal Navy goes back over 500 years. In the 1600s and 1700s, it ruled the Atlantic, fighting and winning wars against the French and Dutch navies. Do you know why the Royal Navy is so great? Because the Royal Navy had help from privateers like me. Privateers were people who made a business out of attacking and capturing ships from countries at war with England. They were called privateers because they used their own private boats. When privateers win a battle, they rob the other ship's cargo and sell it for cash. Privateers sound like pirates to me. Well, except privateers had permission to steal from the king or queen. I fought for my country. You only fought for money. Spoken like a true pirate. Not. Sorry, I didn't get that. I don't speak landlubber. Did you say landlubber? I know you are, but what am I? Landlubber is a sailor talk for a person who lives on the land and knows nothing about the sea. Lubber means clumsy or lazy. No matter where they came from, all pirates were alike in one important way. They all knew how to fight. Sometimes they fought with merchant ships, sometimes they fought with the Navy, and sometimes they fought with each other. Food fight! Are you thinking what I'm thinking? School cafeteria? Right. Only less nutritious. Pipe down! That's sailor talk for be quiet. Comes from the sound of the last whistle pipe signal a ship's officer gave the crew to be quiet for the night. The seven foods on Blackbeard's Food Fight scoreboard are all the foods on the Royal Navy's menu for sailors in the early 1700s. Biscuits, pork, beef, peas, oatmeal, cheese, and butter. Back then, the science of nutrition was new. Living on a poor diet with few vegetables and no fruit meant sailors got sick often. In 1746, Royal Navy doctor James Lind learned that bad eating caused a famous disease sailors often got called scurvy. In 1754, the Royal Navy added lemon juice to the food list for sailors, and scurvy went away. The cure for scurvy was vitamin C. You said it before, and I'll say it again. Had enough of pirate life? More like I've had enough of pirate food. Next time we time travel, remind me to pack a lunch. Next article, Fire in the Hole by Eric Farrell, who is an objects conservator at the Queen Anne's Revenge Lab. He has a long-standing interest in the archaeology, history, and conservation of weapons and armor, and he leads the lab teams for artillery conservation. There are a few things a pirate needs quite so much as guns. Big guns. And the more the better. As a pirate, Blackbeard would have been very aware of this need to be armed. It was all well and good to catch another ship, but if you couldn't overpower your target, your career as a pirate would be short. Evidence and sources vary as to exactly how many cannon were aboard Queen Anne's Revenge. Archaeologists have found 30 cannons so far, and historical records indicate the ship may have held up to 40. This made Queen Anne's Revenge a fast, relatively heavily armed ship, excellent for catching up to and capturing merchant vessels. In short, an ideal pirate ship. The cannon that archaeologists have found on Queen Anne's Revenge are a mixed lot. There are many different sizes made by different people in different countries. Fortunately, cannon are often marked with letters or numbers that help identify them. They may be date marks, markers marks indicating who oversaw the gun's production, weight marks indicating how heavy a gun was, heavier guns were better quality, or marks indicating ownership. Marks are most common on the ends of the trunnions, the top of the first reinforce, and the vent field. These marks are extremely helpful in identifying who made a cannon, when, and where. Here's a caption of a photograph of a cannon, and its caption is, "Many hours and lots of hard, careful conservation work turned Cannon C-24, a 9-foot, 6-pounder, into a stunningly beautiful artifact. Imagine the stories it was part of while on board the Queen Anne's Revenge." The photograph of the cannon appears where the muzzle is on the left. So going from left to right, the sections of the cannon as you're going from the muzzle to the back end are the muzzle and then the chase and then the second reinforce, which has the trunnions which stick out, which where the cannon sits on its holder. Then the first reinforced to the right of the second, followed by the vent field, and at the end, the cascabel. So back to the article. Marks were most common on the ends of the trunnions, the top of the first reinforce, and the vent field. For example, cannon C4 is marked IF on the end of the right trunnion and has the letter P and the gun's weight engraved on the first reinforce. The mark IF indicates the gun was made by John Fuller of East Sussex, England, who headed Heathfield Furnace from 1652 to 1722. The P mark indicates the gun was proofed by the English authorities to make sure it was safe. Cannon C-19, C-22, C-26, and C-27 are all marked IEC on one trunnion with a three-digit date mark, 712, 713, or 714 on the opposite trunnion. All four guns were made by Jesper Eliasson Ehrenkreutz of the Arendal Foundry in Sweden. The mark was used beginning sometime after 1695 until 1722, but the manufacture date for these cannon is known to be 1712 through 1714 based on the date marks. We've run out of time for today's episode of Independent Living. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. If you have any comments, concerns, or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.